Hey everybody, it's Coach Alonda Brooks and you are now listening to I Am Becoming. Now I know you guys are like, she gets on my nerve. Every week I say I'm super excited and humbled and honored and blessed to have my guest. But listen, this one is really, 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 really special to me. And I'm super, super stoked for you guys to sit down and listen to this interview that I'm about to do. Mr. Neil Harrington Pogue Sr. is the mega super producer, Grammy award-winning producer, happens to be my big cousin. So I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us. He's a veteran music producer. He's the master mixer. He was born in Roselle, New Jersey. He has 30 plus years of experience in the music industry. He's worked with multitudes of artists across every popular genre. Most notably, Mr. Pogue has won Album of the Year, a Grammy for Album of the Year. He's worked on Outkast mega hit albums, Speaker Box and The Love Below, which included mixing perhaps the most popular song of the decade, Hey Ya. You know, that's everybody's favorite. Pogue also won 2020 Rap Album of the Year, Grammy of the Year for Tyler, the Creator's Igor. He won this year two Grammys in 2021 for K-Tronauta's album, Bubba, for the best dance electric album, the best dance record for his single 10%. In 2013, Mr. Pogue produced and mixed Earth, Wind & Fire's critically acclaimed album, Now, Then & Forever. Pogue also mixed one of the biggest songs in Billboard Top 40 history, AWOL Nation's four-time platinum single, Sale. One of the most sought-after mixers in the business, Pogue has a resume that literally features the who's who in the music industry, including Audra Day, Dr. Dre, Stevie Wonder, let me say that one again, Stevie Wonder, Doja Cat, TLC, Anderson .Paak, Robin, Macy Gray, and the Nicki Minaj. Welcome to I Am Becoming.
Hey, hey, hey. Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me, cuz. I appreciate it.
Yes, you're welcome.
I am truly humbled.
No, I'm humbled. So listen, I've been your fan since I was probably like 8 and we was all at Nana's house for Christmas and you came in with the Whitney Houston World Tour leather bomber jacket, y'all. I'm trying to tell you, I was like, my cousin's famous. That was the first thing I said.
No, no. So, you make me feel old.
I've literally been waiting for this day since I was like 8 years old to be able to pick your brain about your craft. So thank you so much for coming. And I know that there's someone at home listening and waiting to hear how you got started in the industry. So we're going to jump into that.
Okay.
What made you pursue music?
What made me pursue music? You know, I don't know. You know, people ask me that and it always takes me back to when I was a kid living in Roselle, living on top of Nana Pogue's house. I don't know if you remember that at 411 East 9th Avenue out there in Roselle. I don't know if you were.
Yeah, East 9th Avenue. I would never forget. Yes, sir.
Yeah, that was the nucleus of everything. So, but I lived up top on top of her from the time I was born up until I was around 4 or 5. But during that 4 or 5, you know, year span, I was listening to, I would have this little record player and I would have all these 45s and I just keep playing 45 after 45, all these different types of music. And it wasn't just R&B soul, it was pop and all types of stuff, you know? And I guess all that just sunk in my brain. And I've always was very intrigued about music because I would always read the record labels. You know, of course I couldn't really read, but I was fast at that time, but I was fascinated with, you know, with how the record labels looked on the 40. I don't know if people remember vinyl, you know, but I come from the vinyl era, where you got the little 45 vinyl records, and they would have these, each label would have their own brand, their own artwork, you know, and everything. So I would be so fascinated with that. And it just stuck in my brain. And I always wanted to be involved in this music business. not knowing what it was, but just fascinated with just the songs and, you know, how they were created and, you know, how this music was coming through this speaker. So I guess it just stuck with me over the years. And as I got older, I wanted to play an instrument. You know, I first started off playing trumpet, but then that didn't work out. And then I started playing drums. And so, yeah, it's just, you know, and then having little, you know, having the neighborhood band and all that, and having bands in high school, playing in the marching band. And it just, you know, it just took over.
Wow. So I want to give a little bit of background too, because my Uncle Al, which is my grandmother's oldest brother, was an artist. So did that have any?
Third oldest, because yeah. Uncle Ernie was the oldest. He had Aunt Libby, second oldest, and then you had my father was the third oldest. But I'm sorry, your question was.
Did it play a part of, you know, did you feel more creative influence living, yeah. You know?
Right, definitely. And I think that's why I also see music in colors too, watching my father paint when I was younger, because he used to paint. He was a sculptor, he was an inventor. So, you know, just seeing him just create, you know, and I think that made a big impact on me, you know, being a creator too. Of course, not being in you know, painting or drawing, but just the other side of creating as far as art, you know, because music is art as well. Music is kind of painting a picture in its own way. Music is kind of sculpting, you know, music is in inventing something. So I guess that's the other side of art. So yeah, I think that did, you know, I was talking to my mom the other day about that. So it's funny that you brought that up, but I was telling her all my influences from what my father, you know, and instilled in me by just being a fly on the wall, and not by having a conversation, because he died young. He died at 44 and I was 11. But, you know, just that little time that I had to spend with him, it definitely inspired me.
Yeah, that's dope. Yeah, because I know, like, me even growing up having his artwork in our house was like very influential, like just even looking at it. And just matter of fact, I have a piece of his artwork that my mom passed on to me right now. I'm looking at it, the triangle pieces that he made.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Just growing up and seeing that, like it was just so 3D. It was so textured and just, and I know, like, even though it was way before my time, he even had an influence and impact on me as well. Cause I definitely grew up singing and playing instruments as well. And I'm very artistic and creative as well. So that's pretty dope. At what age did you know, like, you wanted music to be a part of, like, your purpose per se, like knowing, like, okay, I'm gonna really try to do this as a career.
You know, it's so funny that I'll go back to the funny part, but I'll answer your question. I think the first, at what age? The age I think I was is, I had to be at least 9 or 10 when it really hit me that, okay, this is going to be something that I want to pursue. That was my, you know, that was going to be my purpose in life, because being in school, I couldn't even focus because music was just always in my head, you know? And, but it's so funny. I talked to my mom, not my mom, I was talking to somebody about this. It's amazing how Michael Jackson has influenced so many, you know, decades. Back when I was coming up, he influenced me in the 60s. When he first came on the scene with his brothers in the Jackson 5. So he inspired me through the late 60s and early 70s. And then it's another generation that caught on to Michael in the 80s. And then there's another generation in the 90s. So it's just amazing. But to answer the question is, like, the Jackson 5 is what really put the stake in the ground. You know what I mean? They were a big influence on me, you know, seeing black kids doing music at a young age. So I thought, hey, I can do that too, you know. So that really inspired me
to
really pursue music.
Wow, that's interesting, and that's really, really dope. We're going to take a break, and we will be right back with the master producer, Neil Harrington Pope.
Greetings. I am Sandra Chang, and I'm so excited about my new podcast, The Profit in the Nonprofit. It's going to be held every Thursday at 9 a.m. And guess what? You're going to learn how to make a profit in your nonprofit, how to set it up, and how to get funding. That's every Thursday at 9 a.m. See you there.
The Light Sunday Collection, where exotic elegance meets luxury. Our collection is a one-stop shop. Whether it's a woman looking for her favorite product line or a husband looking for his own favorite product that he steals from his wife's collection, or you could be shopping for a gift, the Light Sunday Collection is your new favorite one-stop shop. The Light Sunday Collection is a world-class hair care company. Our products are multi-universal and multi-ethnic. Our luxury products are 100% sulfate-free, paraben-free, formaldehyde-free, and DEA-free. Our line of products are the best of the best, from our ingredients to our premium platinum virgin 12 gray A hair. We are the Total Collection. Shop the Total Collection, where exotic elegance meets luxury, at thelightsundaycollection.com. You can also find us on Instagram underneath the Light Sunday Collection.
The Light Sunday Collection, where exotic elegance meets luxury. We are the Total Collection.
Hey, everybody, it's Coach Alonda Brooks, and you are now listening to I Am Becoming. I have the Grammy Award mega producer, Mr. Neil Harrington Pogue. They call him Neil the Great in the industry, and he happens to be related to me. It's so dope. This is the best interview I've done. So welcome back. And before we went on break, you were talking about how the Jackson 5 definitely inspired you to want to pursue music as your purpose. You kind of knew that music was always in your head, and that, you know, you couldn't, it couldn't, it was, wouldn't leave you alone. Yeah. So I want to know, since you have such successful longevity in this industry, and I know that you've even passed the legacy somewhat to your son, who's also doing music. What is five things that you would tell someone wanting to be in the music industry?
The five things that I would tell someone who wants to be in the music business, I would tell them, you got to have patience. You got to have perseverance. You have to have some type of uniqueness. Five things. I don't know if I have five, because those three always, come to mind. You got to have love for this business. Uh-huh. And you got to have passion, because having love and having passion, I think is two different things. A passion, some people can see passion as love, but sometimes passion can be a little bit different. I mean, you really got to have a true love for this business, and you got to have passion for it too. So I would say patience, perseverance, you got to be unique, love, and you got to have passion, a passion for it. Those are the five things. And probably more, but that's what I think of now.
Okay. Yeah, those are good things for definitely anything. I think is a foundation is strong, right, for sure.
Most definitely.
Because I have to know, did you do the whole struggling artist thing, or was it just like, did you get a fast break into the industry, or like, how did you like really break in?
No, nothing's fast when you want to get into my profession, because I'm also a mixer too. So most people know me as a mixer more than a producer. But in my field of work, it is a predominantly white field. And what I mean by that is, you know, you see a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, Caucasian men doing the work that I do when it comes to mixing and producing. You know, there's more, you know, Black folks doing it, but when it comes to mixing, there's really not that many Black guys that are on my level, African-American people of color that are on my level. I'm not saying that they're not out there, but guys who are on my level now. But there was some struggle because people don't normally trust a Black engineer / mixer to work on their music, because they may think that a white person that is in that field has more technical abilities, which is not true. So they have more trust in seeing a white guy there, because that's what they're used to seeing. They're used to seeing someone sitting in that seat, you know, somebody of that culture sitting in their seat. But when it's a Black person, and that's not, and really that's for not just white people trusting white people, it's Black people trusting white people. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing, because they're not used to seeing it. What people are not used to seeing, they don't trust. So it was a lot of, I had to prove myself, you know, and also having the last name Pogue, and this is, and this is before the internet, people would walk in the room and think I was white.
Yeah.
So when they walked in, you would see their eyes, and then they would talk to my assistant thinking that he was Neil Pogue and he was the white guy. And then when they found out that I was Neil Pogue, you would see their face. But being that I already had, at that time, I had a little bit of track record, and they hired me for the job, they would feel more comfortable, because it's like, oh, well, this is the guy that we want to do it, you know?
Right.
But over the years, oh yeah, I had to prove myself. It was a lot of sweat, you know what I mean? You know, a lot of sweat and tears and trying to fight my way up. So it's not something that happened fast. I definitely had to earn it through my passion, you know, and through my perseverance. So yeah.
Funny story. I had my eighth grade teacher, English teacher, name was Mr. Pogue, and he was a white man. And so when he found out that was our family name, he would always, when we would switch classes, he would yell out cousin up the hallway really, really loud. And it was just, just kind of a funny exchange that we had. And he was very, very eclectic man. So it was very hilarious to me when you said that. Like, I was I totally can see that. But that's enlightening, cousin, because I would have never thought that it would be that much prejudice actually in the music industry. I felt like that would kind of be the one area where I felt like it wouldn't almost, I mean, I'm sure it exists everywhere, right? But just not where it would be more neutral. Because it's so many different types of cultures and textures and tones to music, right? But that's very enlightening.
Profession, if you think about it, it took us a long time for them to feel comfortable with us coaching football teams and basketball teams and baseball, you know, because that was a predominantly, you know, white type of field. When it came to coaching, it's like they saw us as the people that would help them win as far as being a player. And it's just like a musician, we're players, you know, so they would trust us playing. But as far as being the guy that is producing the records and in engineering, that was, they gave that to the white guys to do, you know. And there's, you know, and there's a lot of history that has been squashed too. You know, the artist Bob Dylan, I mean, I just found out in the last 5 years that there was a Black guy that was producing Bob Dylan, but people didn't know that, because, you know, those are things that just don't get out. People don't share it, you know. But Bob Dylan's a huge artist, but you never hear about a Black guy producing him, and that's what it was. But, you know, that's how it is in this business.
So, because can you, for the people that aren't in the music industry, because I know like my generation and younger generations, they always hear about the producer.
Right.
But I feel like people really don't even know the difference of the roles and like what people do. Especially so can you give us like a little layman's terms breakdown between the difference between a mixer and a producer?
Okay. Think of a producer as a director with a movie. That's how you think of it. So with a record producer, he does the same job as a film director. He directs the musicians. He tells them what he wants to hear. He tells them if he likes what they're doing. Mm-hmm. When there's a singer in a booth, he tells the singer how he wants the song to be sung. He's responsible for the final product. But now, nowadays, if it's a producer in the hip hop field, he's pretty much the guy who is programming the beats, and that's programming everything. He's not necessarily a guy who is directing a band, because the whole band is inside of his laptop now, doing his own thing. But at the same time, a producer can produce in hip hop and not touch anything, because a producer's job is not necessarily to touch anything, but is to be the responsible party for that song that is to become a record. So if the record fails, it's going to be the producer's fault.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So it's just like a movie. If the movie flops, it's the director.
He's
the one that gets blamed. You know, it's not his fault, but he's the one that gets blamed. So
right.
It's just a responsible party. If that makes sense to the audience.
No, that makes complete sense, because I feel like people always want that title of a producer, but I think like people are calling themselves producers but don't really know.
Yeah, a lot of people.
What
are not
it really means to produce. Like they just think, oh, okay, I went in there and tinkered with the beat and, you know, I threw it down on the track and it was a song. So like getting into the mixing part, like I've always been fascinated with that part of the fact that that's your actual job, because that's, I feel like the mixing, am I right, is mostly the cultivating of the sound.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Like producing a group like Earth and Fire, I was there with the band in the studio. I was the one that they were looking at for guidance and, and to see if I really liked it, to see if it was a good take, you know, to see if they need to do more. I was the one that either wanted to move on to the next song, or I wanted to keep going and finishing and fixing up and, you know, and making notes and doing little things. Of course, I had partners who were with me on that record, but I was the one who was pretty much the sole one that was responsible for the final product. It's one of those jobs that I love to do. And also with that record, I had to mix it after it was done. It was done recorded and produced and everything. And then I had to mix the record. So the word mixing, mixing is taking everything that was recorded and you have to balance it with volume. You have to process it with EQ, with reverb, with echo, with, you know, tricks, whatever you do, but it's about panning. So mixing is so what you hear on the radio and what you hear on YouTube and videos, and if you love it, then you love the mix too, not just the artist, not just the visual video. If it feels good to you, then you like the mix. You like how the bass feels, you like how the low end feels, you like how the high end feels, which, as far as feeling bright or feeling mid-rangey. So I'm the responsible party for all that, painting that final picture in order for it to get to YouTube and what's the other site, going to Spotify and Apple Music. So all those platforms, that's where my mixes go.
Wow. That's enlightening. Mm-hmm. So is there a feeling you get when you're creating that you know, like, this is a Grammy hit right there, like this is a slam dunk?
You know, so funny, a lot of songs that I think that are, when I do have that feeling of what is a Grammy hit, you know, this business is so subjective. You know, like I have, you know, like a song like Hey Ya, when Andre 3000 first played that song. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
I can't hear you.
Hello. Are you there? I think I lost you. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, great. So let's start over. So the feeling, you know, that I get, you know, when I'm creating and knowing that it's a Grammy hit, it's that feeling when it's in your gut. You know, it's in your gut. So so I have to go back to a story when Andre 3000 first played me Hey Ya. And I told him, I said, that's your hit. That's your first single. And he kind of laughed at me because he didn't know. And so I told him, I said, that's your hit right there. And so that's one of those feelings that you just have. As soon as you hear a song, you just know it. I call it your God voice. You know, it's just a feeling that you can't describe. And it's such a subjective business. Everybody has their opinion of songs, that what you think is a Grammy hit, you know, other people may not, but you know that it is. You know, I've been in this business long enough, and I've felt music for such a long time, for 50 something years, that I know when it should be a hit. But once it gets into the record label's hands, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, because they're the ones that have to promote it and market it and, you know, all that. But there's a lot of songs that fall in between the cracks, and you're like, man, I know that's a hit, but it's just timing.
Yeah. So you have had so much longevity in this field. Just being a producer and a mixer is a major part, but you have another major part of you, which is dope. You are a husband and a father. How do you balance your family life with this industry life and stay? I mean, you're definitely a down to earth person, but I know your family is your world. So like, how do you balance that?
How do I balance it? How do I balance my family life? Is that you gotta have a great partner.
Yeah.
You know, someone that helps you balance it out when you have, you know, when you work long hours, you know, having a spouse that understands and finding time to spend with your family. It's like double dutch, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when those ropes are going, it's sometimes you know sometimes you mess the ropes up, and sometimes it, you know, you get in the right time and you keep rolling. You know, and that's how I feel about it. It's just, you got to find the time, because it's a demanding job. It's something that I've always wanted to do, but at the same time, it's not my family's fault that on a whole nother level, that you got to find that time to spend with family. And you know, it tends to work out as long as they understand, you know what I mean? As long as I understand too. So it's a joint.
It's super dope though, because you're married to a professional singer. So
so that helps a lot. When she really, you know, she understands, and she's been great. I mean, she's been a saint in this whole thing, you know, dealing with Mike. You know, she's not as busy as I am, you know, because I'm all over the place. You know, I'm producing this and mixing that, and then I'm getting into producing film now, you know. So which I'm just like learning that whole field of that, you know. I haven't really got anything off the ground yet, but I'm reading scripts, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So
that's so dope.
I'm putting.
So for my listeners out there that don't know, he is married to the beautiful, fabulous Cherokee.
Yes,
and
yes.
She's a dope artist. I'm sure you guys are familiar with her music, and they're like such a beautiful couple, guys. So like, if you ever have a chance to follow them on social media, they have a beautiful family. But so with her being in the industry, do you guys like be like, okay, I'ma go and do work, and then you take a lighter schedule, or does she go hard? You know, is like an ebb and a flow with the seasons, or like of projects, or is it just like case by case with projects and how it comes up?
You know, it's been so spontaneous, because there are times when she wants to work on some stuff, and so I take a back seat. And then there are times when I'm working like crazy and then she takes a back seat. There's been times when she had to go, you know, out of town and do shows. And so I had to pick up the weight. Even though I'm working, I still have to, you know, pick up the weight. So it's just a spontaneous thing. You know, it's like, oh, okay, you got to go. Okay, you got to roll out. All right, cool. You got to do this. And so it's just what we always knew it was going to be like that. So we just fall into place.
Right. Do you guys do music together or are you guys kind of
it's funny. We've done the last two projects that she's done. I've been at the helm. So yeah, you know, she trusts me to work with her for some reason. But, yeah.
Yeah, that's super dope. So where can our listeners find you on social media and what other projects do you have coming up?
I am on IG and on Facebook at Neil Harrington Pogue. I think everything that I have, Twitter is all Neil Harrington Pogue. So that's, just put that in and you will find me.
That's dope. I'm not just saying this because you're my big cousin, but you were like probably one of the chillest person I've ever met in the industry. I had to tell my mom a little bit. Like, I was like, Mom, I'm kind of fanning out a little bit on my own big cousin. She was like, oh, it's okay. He's just so chill. He's so laid back. But I know, like, between me and you, growing up, I always knew that you were my mom's favorite cousin. She always talked about you all the time.
So funny. She's one of my favorites, too, because, you know, Donna, she's older than me, but I always, you know, I don't know what it is about Donna. I've always been, you know, we've always been close. I mean, of course, we've been apart so many years and she's been doing her thing and we're doing my thing. So we never really have time to speak. But once we do get to talking, it's like we spoke yesterday. We just jump right in and start talking and having fun, talking about the old days and, you know, so your mom is the coolest.
And I know your dad was my mom's favorite uncle. She named my older brother after
definitely.
Him.
Yep, sure did.
So thank you so much. And guys, you know that you can always find me on all my social media platforms. I Must Become, the number one. imustbecome.com is up and functioning. You guys know, don't do anything for man's approval, but do everything with man in mind. As you can see from Mr. Pogue, that you can come from a small town in New Jersey and make a longevity in your career, pursuing your passion. Guys, it's never not a time to become. You got to make sure that you're leaping and you're becoming, because somebody is waiting on you to become so that they know that it's possible. Had I not had an opportunity to see his dad's artwork on the wall, I wouldn't have done a lot of the creative things that I've done. And as you see, he said it was also an influence to him. So thank you, Uncle Al, for becoming so that we could walk in your footsteps. Thank you, cousin, for becoming so that I could walk in your footsteps. Y'all, remember, you can meet me here every Sunday at 3 p.m. to leap into your becoming. I love you for real. Peace.